Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, December 7th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, Melody.
How are you today?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Super. You know, I think this is the first time, I didn't watch a lot of news today. I watched the morning news and did my own research on the news and everything, but not a lot of talk about Pearl Harbor this week. And I guess we're just getting older. That's getting to be older news. And
well, let's see. CNN, I heard, I didn't see it, but I heard it in the background. CNN had a report on it earlier in the afternoon. So there was... you know, I'm not sure if it's on all at the top of all of the programs of the day, but they came through in the 2 o'clock hour, I think it was.
So, you know, a few, but not like, you know, I guess it's sort of like you get to these, it's not a milestone, so, but anyway, just kind of interesting, I thought. There's so much other news going on. The good news is gold was up $25.50 today at $1,864. Silver was up 36 cents at $24.62. Platinum, couldn't keep the lead. Down $30. Down $30 at $1,031. And palladium was down 6 at $2,357. So another interesting day when I see that. You know, I try to pick out these little anomalies that I see in these. You know, when I'm giving the prices, you have gold and silver stronger, but yet you have platinum and palladium weaker, the other metals, precious metals. So more industrial. Usually silver would follow along with the industrial white metals, but today it followed along with gold, so more of a monetary metal today. And we often see that with silver. You know, in all past recessions going back, you know, from day one of this nation, whenever there was a recession, silver was usually used maybe as a, you know, some sort of an industrial metal. And, you know, down times of hardship, it's converted back to a monetary metal. So are we seeing that at this moment? Don't know, but it's an interesting, silver will always be part of our monetary system if we followed the Constitution. However, at the moment, it's just interesting to see that it followed gold and not the other two white metals. USDX today was up 0.05 after being down most of the day at 90.85. We're going to talk about the dollar here. Crude oil was down 59 cents at $45.67. Stock market today, I mean, it was down, you know, 100 points on the get-go. Right now, we're looking at 210. So the markets moved, and then they kind of just stayed around that little bit of area. I mean, we saw that with gold, too. It was up big, and it kind of stayed there all day, fluctuated a couple bucks here and there. But for the most part, it didn't do a lot of changing. And I just got an update on the Dow. It's only down 148 points, still at 30,069. Well, we'll see if they can change it again. It's 5 minutes after the hour. We'll see if they can't change it again. The NASDAQ was up 55 at 12,519. The S&P was down 7 at 3,691. Maybe I'll just start doing the market report at the second segment. 10-year yield, 0.93%. That's down a little bit. And European Asian markets, you know, Hong Kong was down 1.25%. And that is pretty much it on the day. I mean, you know, all talk is, you know, the vaccine. We're going to talk about that too here. And it really is amazing. The third largest world economy, and there's back on lockdown in California, shut down. And the Dow's down 140 points. Really? Amazing. Truly amazing. And that's not all the other places around this country. And they don't even report anymore or much about European countries where they're shutting down. You know, France did, had a lockdown, and people kind of rebelled against it. You know, because it's so unfair. They're just a bunch of hypocrites that, you know, push these laws down businesses and so forth, and then they turn around and, you know, go against what they make everybody else do. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, people are just making stuff up. There's no leadership anywhere. It just seems like people are, you know, just doing whatever needs to be done. It's hard to tell what's true in the news. It's hard to tell what's true on the vaccine, on the virus. It's hard to tell what really is the truth. So you kind of have to just take a position on what you believe. I mean, there's a whole lot more chaos in this country than what you'll ever hear on mainstream media or anywhere else for that matter. I mean, it's just, and yet, and then I'm glad, I'm happy, I'm thankful that there's still a relative calm. I mean, yeah, these two, and again, it's kind of like there's no reality to anything. So I'll take the calm as long as we have it. But the calm won't last. And that's a sad thing. You know, we talked about the dollar coming off, going down. It's coming off another bad week. I was doing the market report. You know, we had a high on the dollar, a 52-week high of 102, almost 103. We're hovering around 90. That's a big drop. You know, 13% since March. And again, it's barely mentioned by anyone. That's your purchasing power going zip. Your dollar is buying less out there, ladies and gentlemen.
Shh.
We don't want to tell anybody. Don't buy gold and silver. Shh.
Melody, they might be listening.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sure they are. But the dollar, you know, again, it's gone unmentioned by central banks. You know, maybe that'll change as the values of many major currencies, we've seen them strengthen to the highest levels in years against the greenback. Where's Larry Kudlow? He's a strong dollar king. You don't hear him out there talking anymore.
He's working on his resume, I'm afraid.
Yeah, his retirement, you mean?
One can hope.
He should retire. God love him, he should retire. But, and while the dollar's dive has helped rally stocks in emerging countries, those that are dependent on exports, you know, will see a slowdown in their growth because of the newly strong currencies. As the markets opened today, the dollar was near its lowest level in over a year against at least 17 currencies, and that's including all eight of the G10 currencies. The Taiwan dollar and the Israel shekel recently hit their strongest levels against the dollar in more than 23 and 12 years, respectively. Like the rally in equity markets, the bottom falling out on the dollar looks to be based on excitement about the development of vaccines. It's supposed to be a stronger economy. In 2021, really? You shut down the world economies and you expect a recovery, a sharp rebound in 2021? California, the third largest economy in the world? Are you kidding me? Who believes that? You got to be insane if you do, Dave.
Well, only a lot of the people who are saying it. I mean, there's... I guess... My eternal optimist alter ego lends my belief to give these folks the benefit of the doubt that, you know, it's just wishful thinking, particularly after this brutal year in the pandemic. But there's so many exceptions that have gone on, not just this year, but, you know, since statistics have been kept. And it turns out that so much of it's been either an intentional misleading or an outright lie, and it's discouraged an idealist like me. And you know, we're not even talking about the Fed here. Their market backstop in the form of unprecedented bond buying, municipal bonds, corporate bonds, treasuries, plus negative real interest rates. Juan Perez of Tempest says he worries the weak dollar trade already may be a bit overdone. Huh. He believes markets may be looking past significant risks, including possible hiccups in the development and rollout of the vaccines, which could take longer, if not a lot longer, than we're hearing. And that's not even taking into account how many people are going to be willing to voluntarily take the vaccine, which requires, in most cases, two shots. You've got a hard Brexit, which we're going to talk a little bit more about if we have time later on in the program, and just this propped up anxiety throughout Europe. Now, asset managers have built a record short positions against the dollar. Yeah, Credit Suisse has forecast the euro to rise to $1.25 by the end of next year. Goldman Sachs has called for shorting the dollar against the yuan, along with further gains in the euro and yen. And Morgan Stanley and Citigroup, as we've discussed the last few weeks, have forecast a weaker dollar next year. What breaks this chain? Well, usually it has to come from U.S. fundamentals. Although, more economists say it now likely needs some break to the extraordinary risk momentum. And that's a scary thought, ladies and gentlemen. If not from new flows, then it has to come via evidence that risk is overpositioned and bellwethers like the S&P are no longer responding to good news. We'll talk about the good news, bad news paradox, I guess you can call it, later in the program as well, Melody.
You know, you had mentioned your optimism, you're optimistic, and I'm always an optimist. I'm always optimistic, too.
You are.
You know, but I'm also a realist. And if all of these people who say, you know, if we give them the benefit of the doubt, let them put some information behind it other than a vaccine and stimulus, because that's what it all comes down to. And, you know, that's so they don't have anything to support. I don't think they have any credible information to support. Their 1 and 1 equals 4. You know, their 1 and 1s aren't equaling, you know, what it should. So, you know, it's interesting to see where they're going, and they're hopeful, because if they said anything else, the stock market would crash like a rock and they would lose clients. Clients don't want to stay with somebody who says, you know, things are going to be terrible next year. People only want to stay with their financial planners and send their money to folks who say, you know, it's going to be a good year and, you know, you'll make your money back next year. So, unfortunately, that's the motivation of, you know, a lot of these, you know, reports and surveys and everything that that gets fueled to, you know, a more of an optimistic view for next year. I mean, I'll tell you what, I want 2021 to be better than this year. But, there's that but. How can it be? How can it be? I don't care if they gave vaccines down to the last dog on the planet. You know, you just can't shut down. You just can't wipe away a year's worth of growth. It's when you're only trying to catch up. You know, I shared the story of the one doctor I went to. He says they're 6 months in the red. Well, you know, you can go on and function for 6 months and go on to the seventh month and still function, but you never recapture what you lost. I mean, it's really hard. not in today's environment. So, you know, it's, in my view, I think 2021 is going to be a disaster. Because I think finally we're going to start seeing these things funnel through. All of these, what, 100,000, we're going to talk about, I think I saw the number, 100,000 restaurants closed. Yeah. It depends on how many total restaurants there are to see whether that's a big number or a little number. Sounds like a lot.
Yeah, that's closed permanently.
So, and I don't know if that's just, we'll talk about that here and get some updates on that. But, you know, the poor woman in California, and this is going all over this country. You know, she spent money to open up a outside restaurant, patio, so she could serve her customers, so she could have a living and give a living to her employees. Well, she gets closed down. But then a movie set gets to open up a huge parking lot, cafeteria or buffet or whatever for their employees or something, right next door to her, and she's shut down, and they get to serve food in the very same type of setup. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense. It's making a lot of people angry, and it's putting a lot of people out of work. So, you know, as we discussed on Friday's program, the jobs report was weaker than expected. It only showed 245,000 jobs. They were expecting 450,000. And in October, there was 610,000. This isn't good news. This doesn't make well for 2021. You know, the report's most telling negative was the decrease in labor force participation and the increase of 400,000 people who said they wanted to work, but they didn't look for a job during the month. Maybe it was the holiday. Maybe it was Thanksgiving. There were 10 million fewer people employed in November than there were in February. 10 million. And we went into a recession in February. At November's pace of jobs growth, it's going to take 3 years. 3 years to return to February's employment level. Great 2021 coming our way. We'll be right back. Can't believe it's break already. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. You know, Dave?
What?
I always do a comparison on my prices versus those folks online. People know who they are, you know, the biggies. I mean, there's always one or two out there that I don't know where they're getting their pricing. They're just, they really are on a different planet. So I wouldn't want to have your product shipped from Mars or anything like that. But for the most part, the larger, particularly those who promote a lot of silver and say, we've got the lowest prices online, period. That's it, that's that, and we're the best. And sometimes they can have a really good, they'll run, you know, hey, just like we do. You know, sometimes I can get product in and, you know, I can sell it lower than anybody else in the country. It's a special. Sometimes, you know, dealers will do loss leaders. They'll lose something in order to, well, I mean, I don't do those games, but a lot of my competitors do when I can't match or beat their price. That's usually what they're doing, some sort of a loss leader type promotion. And that's okay, because it's temporary, it's brief, and, you know, they sell whatever they needed to sell. They need to increase their cash flow somehow, so that's fine. I did a comparison today, Dave, on 100-ounce bars. I just couldn't believe the difference. Now, you know, I just couldn't believe the difference in premium. And the customer said to me, well, you know, and he was looking for quite a few, and he would say, well, you know, if you can beat their price, you know, I'm going to give my business to you. I've been working with these people for a long time. They've done me well, so forth and whatnot. And I'm sure they have. And when I quoted him the price, I think he was shocked. And he says, well, you know, inventories are slow, lackluster. That's why I says, no, that's not it. That's not why they're that much higher than my price was. This is all baloney that they're selling a lot of people on the internet. These online sellers of silver are taking people to the cleaners. And yet I get so, I shouldn't say this, but when people call me, oh, well, you know, I bought it from them and they were the cheapest and bought, well, you know, I'm sorry you bought from them because you could have gotten more silver. So folks, don't, you know, price shop. Price shop. I do. When I give prices, I have to make sure I'm competitive. But it just baffles me, Dave. And these people have been taking folks to the cleaners since silver prices started to go up. And we did have a little bit of a shortage. And who was the only one out there saying, don't buy silver, wait. Let the premiums come down. Let's boycott these wholesalers that are playing these games and bring the premiums down. Well, the premiums have dropped about $5 since then. And the premiums on bullion? I mean, they were charging for a bar, a 100-ounce bar, $1.30. That was their premium. That's what they were making, $1.30. It's just, you shouldn't be paying that much. I mean, my gosh, you could buy, and that was secondary 100-ounce bars. It wasn't even brand-name bars. You could buy brand-name silver rounds for prices less than a 100-ounce bar. It's just, it just gets so frustrating. Anyway, 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We'll just finish up. We were talking about labor force participation, Dave, heading into the break. Did you want to add anything else to that?
Well, I'll tell you what. It is an important topic, a distinction between the jobless rate per se and the labor force participation. To this extent, I mean, the more people who leave the labor force permanently, the bigger the headwind is to longer term growth. That is, it takes longer to get back to where you were, much less, you know, to get ahead. And remember that those who are currently out of work increasingly report that their layoffs are permanent rather than temporary. So theoretically, they're not coming back at all. Or if they're coming back, it's going to take them longer to come back and in another field where in many cases they have to start over again. A permanent job losers accounted for 35% of the 10.7 million unemployed in November. Now, while there's some who are, you know, saying levels could come back sometime as early as next year, at ratings agency S&P Global reporting that they don't expect U.S. employment to reach its February 2020 levels until at least 2023. Their chief economist, Paul Grunewald, says economies are not going back to their pre-recession configuration. As a result, new firms are going to form in growth sectors exit shrinking ones, and workers. I got something caught in my throat. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen.
A frog.
Ribbit. Oh my gosh! Yeah, and ribbit. Workers who are starting to move, excuse me, toward those growth sectors and away from the shrinking one. They're known as the creative destruction. So we'll see what that destruction means. I mean, certainly the restaurant numbers you were talking about is a prime example where I suppose some of those displaced workers in those 100,000 plus permanently closed restaurants will look down the line when I guess newer ones reopen, or new ones open, period, or old ones that aren't closed permanently, you know, start to hire back. But by and large, I bet you a lot of them are going to be long-term chronically unemployed or going to be looking for a job in another industry.
Yeah, based on how what their background is also.
Yes.
That means, you know, it's going to be a difficult change. Some will have to take additional training and so forth to enter a new area of work. So it's not going to be easy. It can be done. It's not going to be easy.
And then you got these business economists, this next story that we're going to get into, which, I mean, it just decries logic and common sense and credibility.
Well, I'm not going to – we have a lot of clients who live in Colorado, so I'm going to say these economists live in Colorado for the recreational. But now they might live in New Jersey and every other country, maybe every other state in this country coming to you soon. But, I mean, they have to be either drinking or smoking something because – but, again, they have to – they can't say anything else. They can't say the National Association for Business Economics. Their latest outlook showing a 73% of its rosy-cheeked panelists believe that we're going to return to the pre-pandemic GDP levels by the second half of 2021. That's 6 months from now. So now you know why they gotta be smoking something. Mm. And that's even higher from August. You know, back in August, there was, 60%? One half of the group, or about one-third total, expect the rebound won't happen until the second quarter, until, 2022? Well, those are, it's a little conflicting as far as what the numbers read, Dave, but...
Well, I'm just here on the other end of the microphone shaking my head. Now I'm rubbing my forehead. Sometimes it's not confusing, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, it's mind-boggling, though. Where and how they feel they can come up with these numbers and then present them as if, you know, hey, they're serious. And they are. I mean, the 73% that Melody just mentioned, that's close to double the October survey, when 38% of panelists believed the full recovery would occur before 2022. Their survey chair, Holly Wade, says the panelists have become more optimistic based on recent news of effective vaccines. You know, it's just a white swan that plays into confirmation bias, in my humble opinion. I mean, everyone's so hopeful for one thing, but then in protecting their industry, if you will, their profession, whatever, their company, I think the other bias there is, you know, things are going to be better before they're worse. And, you know, their median forecast calls for 4.1% growth in the fourth quarter of this year. That's for real. That's for inflation-adjusted GDP. I guess it's possible. I'd be surprised now that we're seeing... you know, I think a more widespread and harsher shutdown in some major areas.
But a lot of these are really not, you know, they might have this survey, but again, there's no discussion on what's going to happen when the moratorium on rents expire. What's going to happen to the housing market? We talked about the housing bubble last week. What's going to happen when we have to address those issues? What happens? Already there's talk of extending. Well, I think they did extend the tuition to the end of January. It's supposed to expire December 31st. Yeah. I think they just they extended it to the end of January. And they actually want to eliminate, which is the craziest thing that they can do. So, I mean, how are they going to address the housing issue? They can't just lower rates like they did in 2008.
Well, first of all, it's going to be a transfer of payments. From one sector to others. I mean, we know that lawyers, no offense to my attorney friends, but lawyers are certainly going to have a heyday with people trying to protect their homes from either foreclosure or themselves and their families from eviction. But you've got not just the rent payers and mortgage payers. I'm less concerned about the mortgage holders, the lenders, the banks, particularly the big ones. But certainly the private landlords and ladies, the non-corporates, the individuals, they've been hurt this year. That hurt will be extended. It'll be sort of a double whammy as they're forced into – bringing forth these eviction proceedings. I'm sure some don't care about it, but I would bet a good chunk of them do. It's gonna just bring so much beyond the economic impact. I mean, we have a story here, if we get to it in the program. If not, we'll talk about it later in the week, about mental health after a year in the pandemic. And you think that this is all going to combine to increase anxiety, add another stressor.
You know, and what's sad about, I mean, you know, you could say, well, you know, the forbearance on the mortgages, you know, the people are just going to pick up, you know. No, these people don't, a lot of them lost their jobs. Their jobs aren't coming back. They have to, that's what we've been talking about.
10 million people.
And the scary, and the numbers. How many millions will be affected by this housing situation?
A huge multiplier effect.
Millions and millions and millions. I've read 30 million. I've seen numbers higher. I've seen numbers lower. But most of them are higher. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. Homeless. I mean, they're just not saying that, you know, they're going to be homeless. I would think that these mortgage or the landlords will be able to evict right away because it's been so many months. They're still going through. I don't know if they're still going through the process of for eviction and so forth. I think they are. And I don't know how you get people out of your house in a situation like this. You're certainly, depending on the areas that you live and how many you have that will be evicted, you know, the sheriff will have to remove them, and, you know, they can only remove so many per day. And I don't know if they're willing to do that based on this. I don't know, Dave, how is that addressed? How is the situation going to be handled? Or are they just going to extend it, keep extending it? But then you're going to have these, the property owners who go belly up.
Yeah,
then the banks get to own it all.
There's got to be relief for them as well.
We're in this going in this next break. Please stay tuned.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Do we have some good news, Dave?
You know, we have not just one good news story. We have two in a row.
Do you think I can find something to twist that around, maybe?
I have no doubt.
Well, let's start out with, since we're in the holiday season, I need to look up, we'll talk about it later. Tree retailers. Yeah, Christmas trees. I guess because people are having to stay closer to home this year, that maybe they're being a little more getting into the holiday spirit more so than in the past, because they're not traveling as much. Traffic and sales this year at the holiday tree outlets have been anything but ho, ho, hum. I should have said ho, 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 hum. Merchants are reporting a big season that started early, and it looks like it is, just continues to accelerate into the early part of December. And people have the time at home this year. They're traveling less. So they really want to do something kind of to pick up their mood because of all the stress that everybody is under. Now, this is according to Doug Hunley of the National Christmas Tree Association. He also added that the Christmas spirit is a big force this time of year, and people know that the more they put into it, the more they get out of it. Mm-hmm. Tree sales are up almost 30% so far in 2020. There's also evidence that people are getting larger trees and they're buying more home decorations. And I hope they're giving as much too. So when you're walking by, that little guy or girl who's ringing that bell for the Salvation Army, make sure you drop something in their buckets. You don't want to hear a clang. That means you're putting in dollar bills or more. So, but I guess the trend comes amid growing pessimism about the picture of what we've talked about, the economy, for going into 2021, Dave.
Well, one of these industry analysts said the theory is that people will buy additional wreaths, garlands, and a larger tree when times are good and avoid the extra purchase when times are tough. Well, each year, it's according to Evercore, Americans buy 25 to 30 million real live Christmas trees, along with another 10 to 20 million artificial ones. The $2 billion industry, though, can tell an economic story by how extravagant people are willing to get. The pandemic era and recession have obviously added a new wrinkle. With new infections rising again and the likelihood increasing that Yuletide celebrations this year will be more intimate and closer to home, that should benefit an industry that caters to that kind of environment. Chris Gregory, he owns Boston Christmas Trees in Massachusetts, said, "We've seen an uptick in early sales, and a lot of families have bought a lot of other stuff to decorate their houses. Buyers," he added, "are very, very enthusiastic." Two varies, Melody. But apparently that's been the case throughout the industry. Balsam Hill, tree retailer in Redwood City, California, had a Christmas sale in July that saw a huge demand, and it hasn't slowed down since. So, if it's not necessarily good to be a Christmas tree, it's certainly good to be a Christmas tree retailer this year.
Well, I'm part and parcel. You know, I think it's easier because people are at home. They're buying a lot of things online. So I think you would have a tendency to buy more because you are buying online. You don't have to go out and put it in the truck if it's heavy. You know, you don't have to drag it. You know, so it does have, the online purchasing does have its benefits and so forth. Now, these are real trees. And again, just, you know, people shouldn't lose focus on what the real reason is that we have this holiday. So, but, you know, that goes hand in hand also with what we were going to talk about, Americans' mental health that's worse than 20 years. And of course, we all know the old saying is when people were depressed, they used to go to the department stores and buy things they couldn't afford. You know, they, you know, it's supposed to make them feel better, and temporarily at least. And, you know, then they keep on getting into this habit of buying things, thinking that it's going to, you know, get them out of their slump. And so now we're talking about, and I mean, it certainly could be an impact as far as, you know, we're talking about the increases in the holiday spirit, so to speak, is the mental health is the worst it's been in two decades. And we don't know how long these side effects could last from the being closed up since March. Only 34%, well, this is a Gallup poll, only 34% of poll respondents said that their mental health is excellent. Really? A drop of 21% from 43% a year ago. I'm sorry, but I'm cabin feverish, but I wouldn't say that my mental health has declined. So, I mean, that's a significant number. A significant higher number, 76% said their mental health is good or excellent, but that's still a 9 percentage point drop from 2019. Another 18% said their mental health is only fair, and 5% said it was poor. Although the vast majority of demographic groups saw declines, some started off with better reported mental health than others. The portion of Americans who said their physical health is good or excellent was 79%, which is roughly the same as it's been for the last two decades. So, Dave, what's going on? The U.S. had a poor record of providing mental health care prior to the pandemic. It's, you know, what's going to happen now?
God forbid. I mean, our healthcare system was already chock full of holes before this recession, before the pandemic took over our lives. And now many Americans are going to be stuck with that system as they struggle to deal with the long-term consequences. You know, in addition to a crushing wave of mental health problems, I mean, the pandemic has caused people to delay care for other conditions and likely created new long-term health problems for many COVID survivors. We're hearing more and more cases of significant lung damage, kidney damage, even liver problems. MHA President and CEO Paul Gianfrido said severe depression, severe anxiety, psychoses that have already emerged, they aren't going to go away just because one of the precipitating factors goes away, like the pandemic. Of course, we had tens of thousands of Americans were overdosing on opioids the last several years, and the epidemic appears to have gotten worse during the pandemic. Even with all the added knowledge, we know addiction, boy, is a powerful drug in and of itself. Now, the government and private insurers have tried to pick up all or at least most of the cost of COVID treatments, but patients with long-term side effects are going to have to navigate the same patchwork system that has made chronic conditions so expensive and cumbersome to navigate in this country for years.
You know, our health system really is messed up. I mean, that's why whenever I have to, you know, visit to the doctor or whatever for whatever, I love talking to him and listening to him. And then you just realize it's just so far worse than, it's just not high cost. It's just these insurance companies. The ones that we bailed out. I mean, Dave, they're it's even hard to, you know, be descriptive on the stranglehold of the, of these insurance companies in our health. It's just not about free health care and things like that. I mean, I don't believe in free health care. No, I don't. Everybody, no, I don't. But we shouldn't be to that level. I mean, if we had, again, if we go back to a real dollar, a real currency, we wouldn't have the problems, or the problem, we might have problems, but not to this degree. I mean, the healthcare system is just as corrupt as when we talk about the pharmaceutical companies, our healthcare, our insurance companies. It all stems from part and parcel to government programs. I can remember I was in the health insurance, I was in the insurance business when the first HMO came out. And I thought, oh Lord, that's bad news. But they pitch it as good. And everybody got caught up. And I mean, it's just... it's amazing,
they were good,
Dave.
They were good marketers, for sure. I mean, they came up with fancy words like managed care.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like such, well, hey, that's a good thing. My care is going to be managed for. Yeah, turns out it's a euphemism for a bunch of other things like referrals out the wazoo. Denial of claims, and so on and so forth.
And but, managed right into the grave.
But good marketers, yeah. They were.
But I mean, that's how, but Dave, that's how almost our government seems to work anymore, to get what they want for the American people. And I'm not saying that maybe some of the programs might be good ideas. But they just don't function because there's just so much. It really isn't for the people. There's always underlying agendas.
And underlying multimillionaire executives.
Yeah. Yep.
With nonprofit insurance companies. Well, yep. They're both profit and nonprofit. But I'm talking about the nonprofit insurance companies. That at the end of the year have these multi-billion-dollar surpluses.
Yep. Yep.
But hey, it looks like JCPenney's is going to survive bankruptcy, right?
Hey.
So what else? You know, that not all is bad in the world.
Maybe not. But it might be smaller. But maybe it might be a little more solvent. And maybe just in time for the holiday sales. The chain completed its previously announced sale of the retail operations to Simon Property Group and Brookfield Asset Management. Of course, this is going to go by the same way as Sears. You know, they'll dump all the dumped all the debt and everything like that. These people pick it up at pennies on cents on the dollar. But it is the first step in the process that splits JCPenney into two parts. an operating company led by mall landlords and a property company owned by its lenders. The operating company has been freed from Chapter 11 bankruptcy court supervision. The property group will need until sometime in next year's first half to finish getting organized. And the retailer is still led by Chief Executive Officer Jill Salto, who was hired in 2018 and was in the middle of crafting a turnaround plan when the pandemic broke out. And they can blame the pandemic, but they were probably on their way anyway. And by mid-May, JCPenney was bankrupt.
Yeah, how about it? I mean, the virus wasn't the only cause, as Melody alluded. For years before, the chain had suffered from... Will you hear a drum roll? You know what we're going to say. Too much debt. And, of course, lackluster sales that continue to drop over the years as shoppers defected to specialty stores and especially online alternatives. Now, this court-supervised reorganization gives Penny a second chance and their CEO to see if her plan works. Now, there's one retail analyst at Bloomberg who says debt was Penny's biggest issue. So if it can start with a clean slate, the retailer can find ways to reclaim itself. The turnaround likely includes shutting or shrinking stores, capital expenditures being cut to preserve cash. But as it comes out of bankruptcy, spending is going to need to accelerate, especially on its digital enterprises.
Well, we got to find ways to end this program. Thank you, Dave, and we'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe. Good night and God bless. Thank you, Dave.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.